Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
My crew handed me my American flag and I'm running with it. And I'm just, you know, overwhelmed with emotion, feeling gratitude of how did I finish this race and crying. And I finish and I run in and my crew's right there. And I just grabbed my friend Alan and I just was just bawling, crying. And I was just like, I did not think I was going to finish. I did not think I was going to finish.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And if it's your first time joining us, welcome. Thank you. We appreciate you more than you know. And for everybody that's coming back, your family, you know that. If you're finding the value, please share, like, follow, all the good stuff. But let's get right into the guest. So our guest tonight is an impressive runner. But what may be even more impressive is that after hundreds of events, including 70 plus adventure races and more than 40 ultras, he has held to his personal goal of zero DNFs. And while he's fast, as evidenced by his 15 hour and 47 minute finish at the 2017 Brazos Bend 100 miler, it's clear that he doesn't shy away from some of the sport's toughest races. With back-to-back wins at the 2018 and 2019 Badwater Salton Sea 81 miler, which we recently featured as a race spotlight episode, a grueling finish at the 2019 Badwater 135, and recently crossing the finish line at the 153 mile Spartathlon, overcoming incredible odds and severe rhabdomyolysis to keep his zero DNF streak alive. So stick around as we talk mental toughness, what it's like to run 153 miles through the heart of Greece, and more. And with that, Walker Higgins, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you so much. Super excited to be on with you guys.
Well, we've got a ton to talk about, but before we get started, we have to give a shout out to, he was actually our very first patron ever on Patreon. So Joey Coates, I know you're listening, man. We appreciate you so much. Joey is the one that was like, hey guys, you need to talk to Walker. So he kind of put you on our radar. We started doing research and obviously we were very impressed, but Joey, we appreciate the awesome guest, man. So big shout out to you. And he's also a fellow Louisiana boy. So we were talking Louisiana before this.
But that's great. That's great. Yeah. Joey's a good guy. So I appreciate that.
All right, man. So here's the deal. We want to talk Spartathlon. We've got plenty to cover, but like we do with most guests, we really want to get to know a little bit more about you. So we're going to talk about some of your background. For everybody listening, you're what I would call an ultra OG, right? There's not many people that your first 50K was in 2009. There's not many people that you can find on Ultra sign up from a decade ago or longer. So how did that come about? How did you first get into those ultras in 2009 and beyond?
Yeah, man. That was really on a whim. I had this adventure racing team that I had raced kind of all over the South with, doing these sprint races of, say, 3 to 12 hours, somewhere in there. So not technically a sprint, but long multi-discipline races. And my team that I was racing with said they wanted to train for this 50K. And honestly, at that time, I had never even heard of ultras, maybe in like some magazines, but it was kind of like such a niche thing that I thought it was just crazy. And I think we were like 3 months out and I'm like, we don't have time to train for that. So fast forward 2 weeks before, they convinced me to go do a 15-mile training run. And if we did okay at that, we were going to do the 50K the next weekend. So that was my introduction to to Ultras was the next weekend, running a local Louisiana organization called Q50. Great guy, Cesar Torres, and he puts on really good race and super impassioned race director, and did his 50K. And then it was just kind of, I actually ran with my race team. We ran step for step the entire time. And so that was pretty cool. I think we finished in about 4 hours, 44 minutes or something, and just had a great, but, horrible experience at the same time, and was pretty beat up. And I didn't do another ultra for a few years after that. I think 3 years. And then that's when I kind of started getting the bug more. So
I'm curious. Obviously you did the 15 milers, so that must have gone okay because you did it. Most people listening are going, all right, man, you weren't even training for this thing. You went out and ran a 4 hours and 44 minutes, but be honest, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad did it suck that day?
Oh, it was pretty bad. Yeah, it's pretty bad. I guess the thing that I would say is that, yes, it was trial by fire going from 15 to, 31 miles. But I had a lot of those adventure races and that experience of time on my legs, time in an endurance sport. So I had been doing adventure races since 2005. And at that point, I was probably 50 races in. So I had experienced a lot of pain, a lot of long efforts, but never that one discipline. So it wasn't as newbie as it would sound. It wasn't quite as just like, let me see if I can just blow up. So I had more experience than doing nothing, but not necessarily running. So
right, it wasn't couch to 50K.
Right, exactly. And it was pretty horrible there.
Well, so with that, obviously you've done a lot since then. What is it that captured you about the ultra world, and what keeps you coming back?
Man, that's a great question. I found that in, I guess, probably 2013 and 14, I kind of started pushing my limits more and more and getting the distances up there and really starting to challenge myself from a different side than just, picking a random race. It just became a personal challenge. How much could I take and what that limit was. I find that I've always, in anything I've done, with especially physical activities from when I was young in school to now, is just wanting to see how far, how hard, how long I can go, and trying to find that breaking point and seeing if I can push beyond that.
Do you know where that comes from? Like, why you want to pursue that level of angst, if you will, to kind of hit this breaking point? like what draws you to having that, I guess, innate desire, do you think, to punish yourself to some degree?
Yeah, that's, I definitely reflected on that more after the Spartathlon than I ever have.
And we'll talk about that. I'm interested in hearing about that as well.
Right. It's a great question. And I don't find it's like a masochism type thing, mm-hmm. that I want to beat myself up. And because I've reflected on it and tried to kind of really dive into that, but I just find that I just want to see how far and how fast I can go. And I was that way in adventure racing, and that way in soccer, when in middle school, high school, in all sports. I just never stopped. It was just, the weekdays I would leave school and go to an hour of taekwondo. I would teach taekwondo for an hour. I'd go to soccer for an hour. I would go to football for an hour. I would do like 4 hours. And reflecting on that with my parents, they would say, yeah, you would get home and then you would be outside for 3 hours. Like, so it's just kind of like it's that personality of just wanting something to do. Maybe it's ADD. I don't know.
Well, so you may have touched on this just a little bit. So it's interesting because obviously, like you said, hey, it's not a masochism type of thing, right? But we've talked about this with several guests because there are people that approach it different, but it sounds like it's more of a self-exploration. Hey, where is my breaking point? Can I find that? You know, how hard can I push? And so one of the questions they had is, hey, you choose hard events. Why is that? And obviously, I'm sure not every event, because like you said, you run hundreds of races, but some of the ones that really stand out, you kind of just touched on, hey, I want to find some of that. But is there anything else? Is there something to expand on that of, you know, when you look at a Spartathlon, you look at Badwater, some of the things that you've done, what is it about those in particular that draw you in?
I felt like I got to a point to where, like, you know, I know my skill set. I know that I can run pretty fast and I can kind of push myself. Really, that's my skill set. My skill set is, I would rate myself like B to A runner, but high grit. And my ultra friends kind of will say the same thing. They're like, you know, middle to high level runner, elite grit, and I just willing to just go all the way into the tank and maybe get rhabdo and keep going, whatever that means. But to answer your question about like Spartathlon or Badwater, I just really have desired to see where I can push myself against other people, but really it becomes more personal. I've won some races. I've loved winning. It's great. It's a great feeling. It's crazy at the end of a race when you know you've done really well and there's a decent field. But I don't think it's not necessarily about the winning. It's just kind of seeing how far and how hard I can go. And I don't really know how to describe it more than that. So I don't know if there's like there's a deeper thing to scrape away there, but I don't necessarily know like why that is, you know.
No, I think that's good. I mean, you know, what you're saying, what we're looking at here is how you just described at the very end, is that you push yourself and yes, you do enjoy the competitive side of it, but I get the impression that if you can have a successful race for you is to push yourself all the way to your max effort, max limit, win or lose. And if you can hit that point where you feel like you've done it all to the wall, right, then it's a win personally, even if it's not a win podium, right? And I think there's a difference there. And what drives people is different, like Jeremy was saying. And so it's why we ask those types of questions, because it helps our audience and helps us get a really good gauge of you as a person and kind of what pushed you there. So, no, I think it's a fantastic answer, and it's good to kind of understand a little bit more about you that way.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, generally when I frame up my goal setting for races, a work ultimate like stretch goal that's just way out there, that's, I firmly believe I can get that if I have like a perfect race, everything goes well, but it's still just like maybe never going to happen. And then I do like what I'd call my A goal, B goal. And generally I frame up like the placement or podiums at races, those kind of fall towards the bottom, because I feel like if I do reach my own time goals and where that is, it's going to, that'll kind of take care of itself. And, you know, and that can be anything for any runner. I believe you can frame that up as, you know, if you know who's going to be there, you might not be the fastest runner or in the lead pack, but you might have John Doe that you know is the guy that beats you at the last three races, and that's one of the people that you kind of key in on. So there's so many different ways to kind of drive you, I guess.
So there's probably a lot of people listening too. They're like, okay, recognizing that ultra running, I think a lot of times success in ultra running is really around grit, right? So they just heard you say, hey, I'm a good runner, but I'm elite grit. So my immediate thought is like, okay, well, how do I get that? Right. You know what I mean? And some of it I would think is probably innate, but I would also think that there's probably ways to develop it. Now, obviously life experience, but one of the things that we're really interested in, because you sent us a quote when you sent us an email, And so, first of all, congratulations. You just celebrated 25 years of sobriety. You posted about that. So that's a big deal. And it goes into this. So you sent us a quote that said, "Sobriety has played a crucial role in discovering what I was capable of doing and playing a big part in the mindset I have dealing with suffering." So do you mind connecting those dots a little bit about how the sobriety or the experiences that come along with it have maybe helped turn you into the runner we're talking to?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I appreciate you bringing that up. I think that whether it's sobriety or drug addiction or alcoholism or life's challenges, a lot of those super bottoms can become a frame of reference to know that whatever's going on currently is going to pass. Whether it's mile 68 in an ultra and you don't feel like you can take one more step, if you keep going, it's probably going to get better. And, it's like ultra running is a metaphor for life. It's not always going to suck. And, sometimes we feel like it is. If you put your head down and keep grinding, I think, things get better. I heard something recently that was, someone saying, and it's really semantics, but it was, you don't learn from your mistakes. You learn from reflecting on your mistakes. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's really good. Now it's kind of playing with the words a little bit, but it's so true. Cause if we learn from our mistakes, none of us would ever make that mistake again. Whether it's, not lack of planning nutrition for an ultra, and then you go and you do the same thing and you're like, oh, I'm throwing up again. I just think that for me, to really kind of answer that question, I got sober at such a young age, and to have that reference point and that all out hopelessness, it's given me this ability to just reframe those bad points in races and just keep going. Now I'm years later and I've done a whole bunch of races. So I feel like that ability has gotten stronger, but I've also had races more recently where I've wanted to quit 1,000 times, but I haven't given into that. And whether that's a good thing or not, there's, some questions there that I ask myself, why am I doing this? But, we are who we are.
we 100% are that. Do you think your journey to sobriety is what formed some of your elite gritness?
Well, let me say, I hope that didn't come across like cocky talking about my skill set.
No, it did not at all.
Good. Cause I wasn't trying to necessarily boast. I think if we're honest with ourselves, we can reflect and kind of decipher where our skills are. So, I definitely think it did help me develop more grit and more ability, to just kind of push further. And now there's a lot of correlation between what happens in the brain in endurance sports, similar to, what happens for drug addicts and alcoholics and things like that. I've never run and felt like, oh, I'm high. I don't even know what that even means. I just run and I enjoy it. So, that runner's high, I don't really relate to that necessarily, but, the sobriety and the experience there played a huge role in just being hard-headed.
Yeah. When I think about it, so first of all, to be clear, you definitely did not come across to me. That's kind of the know thyself, right? And obviously you have put yourself through the challenges. And when we talk about Spartathlon, I think it'll be clear that grit is a strength of yours. Right. And like I said before, I think for some people that's more innate. Hey, it comes more natural, but I also think it can be developed. And my guess is you've got a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. My guess is you were born with probably more than most. However, you've had experiences and we don't need to dig into details, but a lot of times sobriety stories have experiences that go along with it that bring pain or challenges or things where people have had to pull themselves out of something and have a perspective, like you said, of, hey, this is a race. Yes, this sucks, but I know from experience that I can get through really difficult things. And so hopefully I'm not putting words in your mouth, but that's just like, as I listed, I'm like, oh, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. This is more of a curiosity question, because I kind of want to move on to the DNF piece of it, right? And I heard you talk. So a mutual friend of ours, Dave Terrio, who we had on the show as well, you run on his show, Run the Riot, great show. And I recommend people go listen to it. But I heard you say in that, you said, hey, though, I think the way you put it was, I've been lucky enough to essentially hold on to my goal of not DNFing. And you immediately said, nothing wrong with DNFing, happens to the best in the world, right? But this is something that it sounds like you hold close, and that you put a lot of effort and pain into trying to, you know, hold on to if possible. One of my questions was, obviously sobriety is, and so in just kind of transparency, whatever. So I grew up going to AA meetings. That's my background. My dad, right? He's been sober for 30 plus years now. So I've seen a lot of stories, heard a lot of stories. I myself have not had a drink since, I can tell you the date, November 2nd, 2009. So I don't have chips. I have very bright lines in my life that I know that if I cross that line, everything for me changes. I'll just put it that way. Right.
Right.
I've never put that onto a course where I'm like, oh man, if I drop today, I feel like I'm crossing that line. I was wondering if it feels like a similar correlation for you, or if the DNF has nothing to do with a similar type of feel of like, oh man, that's just a line for me that I don't ever want to put myself on the other side of, because I'm not sure I will like the person that emerges. Related or not related?
I don't think it's related. I mean, maybe to some degree it is in there, but I think that, you know, I just kind of started, I don't know, it became a thing, and now I just keep pushing against it. But I've also had some very bad races that I almost quit quite 100 times.
So you just like having the streak alive, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, and it's not really even something, I mean, maybe when I'm out there, but it's not like I've never DNF'd. It's not even a thing that I make any big deal about it. It's just, one of my best running buddies jokes around. He says that I unfriend people if they DNF. And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? So it's absolutely not true. And it's just a complete joke that he says. But yeah, it's, you know, for me, it's just finding the limit. And I'm sure one day my limit will come where I've got to sit part of a race out, and just hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I'm not a professional runner. So, I understand a lot of professionals, they drop because 30 miles in, it's not their day. So I don't get paid to run. So I'm just going to beat myself into oblivion. So
that makes it even more impressive to me though, is some of the lengths that you've gone and you're still able to keep that streak alive. So, you know, good on you. I think that's cool. All right.
Ready to talk? Yeah, I want to talk about the hardest thing he's ever done in my career.
So Spartathlon, man, we've been dying to talk about this. And it was right about the time, I think, that Joey said, hey,
check him out.
You know, go check out Walker, that you were posting about the Spartathlon finish and some of the stuff that came across. And then you had that big post that was like, man, you know, it's good until it's not kind of thing, right? And some of the trials.
Right.
So if anybody's listening, they're like, Spartathlon, never heard of it. Tell us about the race, kind of give us a description. What was it that drew you to it? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so honestly, I didn't know much about Spartathlon. Years back, I crewed Badwater for a gentleman from the UK, Steve Gordon. And that was my first experience with Badwater. I got the Badwater bug and I was all into Badwater. And he comes into America. I was on this great crew team with Susie Chan and some other awesome runners. And he's saying that like Badwater is like his 1A and Spartathlon was his 1B, or however you want to say that. Like there's two top races and he was doing them both that year. And honestly, I think a lot of Americans don't know much about Spartathlon. They're like, oh yeah, Badwater. You know, they think that's the only big race out there, or whatever their big race is. But it's really kind of unknown in America. I've found, and I was that same person. I was kind of ignorant to it. And so I started looking more into it over the last couple of years, but I really never thought it was possible just because of the international travel and the expense and everything that went into it. But I ended up crewing a gentleman this year at Badwater, and his name is Ian Thomas, and he's another UK runner, but he's run it 8 times now. And his wife told me through talks with them, like, you really need to look into Spartathlon. And this was in January. And yeah, I was gearing up for 100 that I did this year. And I was like, yeah, maybe so. Like, I'll pull it up. And she's like, well, it's really affordable with your pay. You have 6 nights room and board, like you get meals. And it just started sounding like, maybe I can get to Greece. Maybe it would be awesome. So I started looking into it, and the history of the race itself is amazing, which if no one knows about, it's 153 miles from Athens to Sparta. It follows in the original footsteps of Philodippides. And it's just this, I'm getting goosebumps right now, because it's just this absolutely magical start at the foot of the Acropolis. You're running out of the city of Athens at daybreak, and as you're running out, you're crossing, you know, all of these just amazing ruins, and it's just absolutely beautiful. You proceed on through olive groves for 50 miles, and you go over this mountain pass at mile 100. They give you the only trail section over a mountain. So it's kind of, you know, it's like, oh my God, now we got the big trail mountain to climb. But it's just an amazing, amazing event. You finish into Sparta at the statue of King Leonidas. Just everything about the race itself is magical. The people of Greece, if anyone can get to that race, you got to try it. And there's a few races like that I've been a part of, and that's one of them. But learning about it more and more, it was kind of on a whim. And I was in like this, I don't know, few week period where you could sign up. And so luckily they had told me, well, you should maybe sign up. I looked into it, and they have like certain parameters to get in. So the 100 mile, breakdown is 21 hours. You have to run a sub 21. And then if you run a 25% faster than that, you get an automatic qualifier. And so I had a race that I ran in 2021, which would have still counted up until this year as an automatic qualifier. I submitted and I ended up getting in. So it ended up, you know, coming about and working out and getting to experience all of the magic that is this Greece and Spartathlon and the organization. One thing that was really neat about that race is that the race is 100% volunteers. No one makes any money off of it. They have aid stations every like 2 to 3 kilometers. So there's 74 aid stations over 153 miles. I mean, it's just amazing how much they put into it. And I don't even know if I answered the question you're asking, but I figured it kind of that Spartathlon needed that full intro.
You've answered a lot of the questions we had about it, actually, because we wanted to make sure people heard that. Because one of the things when we did our research as well on the race, and you're right, I don't think a lot of people in North America are very familiar with the race at all. When we were researching you and this particular race, astounded just in everything we learned about it. And so it's why we wanted to spend some time talking about it with you, because we want everybody's listening to maybe be exposed to this type of race that they may have never heard before. Like you said, though, just to reiterate, it's 153 miles. It's a 36-hour cutoff. It has, the website says 75 aid stations. You said 74. So 74, 75 aid stations that are spread about 3 to 5 kilometers apart, 1 to 3 miles, like you said, which is close. And there are some extreme qualifying requirements to get in. I even looked and saw, like, if you can run Western states, but it's got to be sub 24 even for that. And so There's quite a few different requirements to get in. So it's not an easy race to get into by any stretch of the imagination. And one thing that kind of stood out to us was, in order to finish the race in the 36-hour cutoff, it's our understanding by our basic math that we did, that you have to maintain at least a 14:07 pace, which is a little bit under a 24-hour 100-mile pace to pull off that cutoff. Does that sound about right?
I haven't done the math on that, but yeah, that seems like it would be close to right. So yeah, it's, you know, even anyone that has done, what my experience, that has raced Badwater or Spartathlon, there's a lot of people that have done both. There's a lot of crossover between the two events. They talk about Badwater maybe being the more extreme environment, maybe in itself the harder race, but the mileage is less, and then you don't have the major cutoffs at like Spartathlon does. So Spartathlon, you have to get through the first 50 miles in, I think, 9 hours or 9 hours and 30 minutes. So it's a pretty good push to start. And every aid station has a cutoff time. So if you start missing or getting behind, it's just going to, you just fall back. So it makes it pretty tough. And like you were saying, looking into it, you start looking at the who's who of ultra running have gone and went to Spartathlon, whether they're American or European. I mean, the Europeans really love Spartathlon, but honestly, the Americans have not traditionally fared very well there. There's plenty of elite that have gone there and DNF'd and blown up and just had, like, you know, 5, 6, 8 hours after the time they wanted to finish. I was one of those guys, but you know, you show up and you try to put that effort in. And so, it was just amazing experience.
You definitely got so many questions, but you know, it's interesting because a lot of times that we talk on this show is like, hey, in fact, you know, one of our top guests, Emily, she said, the secret to ultra running is that it's easier than you think, right? Essentially, if you don't stop, you're going to get across the finish line, right? We can do these things. However, when you look at Spartathlon, it's like, well, actually the majority of people, the way they have it set up, are probably not going to be able to finish, right? So this is a different type of event. And it's kind of like you say, hey, the 4-hour marathon, it'd be like having the slow cutoff at the marathon, you know, 4 hours, and then saying you're going to do another half of that, or a 24-hour 100-miler plus another half. And so it's pretty interesting, man. Once you start realizing, hey, this is fairly aggressive, which is why it makes sense that there's, you know, really strong qualifying. So if you're listening and you're thinking, hey, I would love to do that race, you know, look into that, understand what it's going to take, because it sounds like similar to a Badwater, right? It's not going to be you just sign up and go out and, you know, trudge along.
But I am curious though about the idea though, because Badwater has a low DNF rate. It's because of the fact that the process is so hard to get into. And so I'm wondering though, because I don't know about the DNF rate at Spartathlon, is it a low DNF rate because just to get in it, you're going to be somebody who can put in that type of work?
My guess is it has a higher DNF rate because it's so aggressive, because Badwater still has a long window.
Right. But it's a lower DNF rate because it takes a lot. You have to have qualified to get in, and the qualifications to get in are a little hard.
Right. But then even if you blow up, you can pretty much get through it. This one, if you blow up, it sounds, I mean, you're kind of done.
We're talking amongst ourselves. Why don't you tell us your perspective of that? Yeah.
No, I like that. That's great. I think the fast cutoffs kind of start to, and I honestly, I didn't look at what the cutoffs were because I just felt like I was going to be ahead of them. So I didn't even pay attention to one. I just started running. But I know that a lot of runners go into Spartathlon feeling like they just got to get in front of 50 miles. And then once they get past that 50, those cutoffs get a little bit, it's not as aggressive. That can hurt some people going out too fast, you know, maybe faster than they would have normally. And then they're kind of cooked later. With Badwater, it's hell on earth. So
it's cooking the entire absolute time. You're literally cooking.
Yeah, right. It's just absolutely amazing and horrible, and both of the races are, and they were both amazing experiences.
So I had the question later, but I want to know, since we're talking about comparison, if you walked in fresh, which one's harder to finish?
Man, that's a great question. Thinking now that I have, you know, I just want to sit and visualize like the hard point of Badwater and the hard points of Spartathlon and go. If I walked in fresh and raced the way I race, 9 out of 10 times, I think Spartathlon would be the easier race for me.
Okay.
Not that it's an easier race.
Right.
But with Badwater, the way I've told different people is that the in a marathon, you can have, say, 20 things. One thing goes wrong and you can kind of patch it up and you can get a finish in or whatever. And 100-miler, you know, a bunch of things can go wrong and you can patch them up. With it, at Badwater, it's like throwing 1,000 potential things could go wrong. And if it goes wrong 1 minute, the minute it goes wrong, 5 minutes later, you're going to be puking everywhere or dehydrated, or just that extreme weather makes it, it just speeds everything up. And that's why they tell you, like, there's signs all over Death Valley, like, do not get out of your car.
It's the weather that's the external variable for him.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because I've heard you say, you know, you actually do well in the heat. I've heard you talk about some of your sauna work and being able to do that. We've had Chris Kosman on the show a couple times, and right. You know, obviously he puts on a race, but we've heard directly from him, right? Some of the different stories. And so I get that. It's interesting to hear that perspective. The funny thing is, that's why I wanted to say showing up fresh, because I've heard you tell both kind of the problematic stories, right? It's, I didn't want to ask it as which one was harder in your experience, but which race, you know, right. Do you think? Because those are two different questions. All right. So staying on Spartathlon. So according to the race description, so you mentioned it, kind of this mountain trail, right? So it's Mount Parthenio. Is that how you say it?
I would botch the name as well.
All right. So Mount Parthenio. So here's the interesting thing, right? It talks about it as a mount, but when you look at some races, the elevation on that is 3,937 feet. So when you talk mountains in ultra races, that seems pretty low. However, in that same description, it says that man has had no impact in 2,500 years on this, you know, location or this mount. And it sounds like when you read the description that this is horrible. Just the wilderness. So tell us about that part of the race. And is it as hard as they make it sound in the description?
Yeah. So that section you approach, you have a winding mountain roads and you reach mile 95.5 and in an aid station right there. I think the combo of being at mile 100 roughly and then being on road all day and then be told, yeah, off you go, go hop on a trail now is just a pretty rude awakening. But it was definitely like old school, like goat trails with rocks and boulders and all that, and switchbacks just all the way up. And you could see lights up the mountain. I wouldn't say it's like the hardest mountain to climb, but I mean, you're pretty toast at that point, you know, to get up over a mountain, especially after we had some climbs, but they were road climbs and stuff. So it's a rough section, but it's a manageable section. I built it up. If you look at the profile of the course, it just goes like that, but that's because it's, you know, condensing 153 miler into a profile on your computer screen. So it makes that point look really bad. And some of the runners that had been to Spartathlon, you know, I was consulting with them and they were telling me, don't worry, it's, you know, you power hike that section, it's going to be 30, 45 minutes of power hiking. Just don't go blow yourself up on it. And that's what I did. I just kind of, when I got there, chilled out at the aid station for a few minutes and then got moving up the mountain and got to, it's like mile 101 is the top point, and then you make your way down. So rough, but not horrible.
Better than I pictured. I was like, you're going to be making your way through the brush to the next light, you know, kind of the way they talk about it. But Okay, so not smooth single track, but it wasn't like you were having to forge through the wilderness. You could.
Right. Yeah, it's a clear trail, but okay. it's a I guess you'd say unmolested trail. It's not like it's you can tell they don't bring weed eaters up on it, you know.
Right.
So
another question I had about just I guess trying to understand the course and some of the logistics is, again, we touched on the idea that there's so many aid stations and there's so many cutoffs for each of the aid stations, like you said. But why do they have so many? Like, I know in Badwater, you know, you've got your crew that you're going to stop every mile or so, mile and a half one. Why do they need this frequent number of aid stations for Spark Diathlon?
Yeah. Is it necessary or is it convenient?
I don't think it's probably necessary. Their whole goal, I know that Sportathlon is to give back to the sport, and they want people to have a great experience. And I think it's probably that they want people to be able to come do this race and to experience Greece. The people of Greece are just, if they know you did Sportathlon, it seems like everyone I talk to, that it would come up in conversation. Or my friend would say, hey, he did Sportathlon, that my friend that was crewing me. And they're like, yeah, all right. And they say, bravo, 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 bravo. You hear that 5,000 times on the race. So I think it's just to, you know, the lifeblood of the race. They want it to be accessible for people. And if you have to bring a crew with you internationally, that it's maybe makes it a lot harder. So it makes it to where you can do the event at your own leisure, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's plenty of great races where they have that. One of the things, like he said with Badwater, was like, you know, Chris pretty much said, well, if you don't have your crew every mile or two, you know, you probably aren't going to make it. Right. And I think,
right.
So if I remember right, Dean Karnazes, right, he has a book about this, about running the Spartathlon. And if I remember in that book, it sounds like it's pretty exposed. And so that was one of the questions we had is,
right.
Hey, it may not be extreme like that, but being so exposed, you know, it would make sense that you'd have that many aid stations. But obviously it sounds like just hearing kind of the culture and the excitement around it.
Yeah, right. You know, and for me, the year that I ran this year, with my experience, I was fortunate. But I mean, I was training in the Louisiana heat. This was by far the hottest summer I've ever trained in. I was doing 20 milers and 120 heat index. And I went to Spartathlon feeling like I was in the absolute best running shape of my life. Hands down, I was like, destroy your mindset. Like, I am going to just go off. And so like I was ready for any heat. So I remember getting warm, but never feeling like I was super hot. Now my crew said it got hot, but I just felt like it was okay. Now we also did have pretty good weather overall. I know in certain years they've had higher temperatures. So because it is all exposed, you don't really have, I mean, I don't think we really caught a shadow for pretty much the whole entire race. So that does make a difference, especially if the heat and the sun are beaming down on you. We were pretty fortunate in that we had a good bit of cloud cover and such like that.
Awesome. So I'm interested. We're going to talk about kind of some of the low moments, but take us to a favorite moment or memory of the race that wasn't the finish.
Yeah, that's a great question. My story of the race is that I was pretty much wrecked from the beginning. 10 miles in, I looked at my watch just to kind of get a pace idea. And I think I was running like an 8:15, 8:30. And I was like, okay, this is right where I want to be. Heart rate's good. Pace is where I want, but I have absolutely no energy. Mm. So that's a rough way to start that race. And that just perpetuated. And so I started to kind of, you know, if I kind of skip ahead to mile 50, there's this area called Ancient Corinth. And I remember leaving out of Ancient Corinth and running through these olive groves. And I crossed like maybe this little bridge that I think I crossed or visualized. And right when I went over it and turned, there was this gentleman that I didn't know. I hadn't seen him yet in the race. And he just starts puking everywhere. And I don't know why, like, he wouldn't have his own water, but I put my hand on his shoulder and I mean, maybe a weird thing to do if someone's puking, but I just felt like, man, he's really suffering here. And I asked him, I said, "Do you want some water?" And he looked at me and stood up and he's like, and he was from Argentina. And he said no. And he's like, "Let's go." And so we hooked up and we ended up running 70 miles together.
Wow.
Roughly. Just like goosebumps. I mean, he did not speak English. I speak like 30 words of Spanish. Like just this bond that was formed running with this person. Just, he was running outside of his comfort zone and I was definitely outside of mine. And I just had no energy from what I was feeling earlier in the day. And we just kind of kept pushing each other and we would run into these aid stations and we would kind of like, you know, give each other a dap and he would run on past the aid station to his crew and I would stop with mine. And each time I kept thinking, oh my God, I hope he doesn't leave me. Cause I mean, I just have nothing. And so we would meet up. I'd start running out and he would be on the outside of the, past the aid station. And we would hook up and just start running again. And we ran all the way to probably about mile 120 together. I mean, it was just magic. It was just like, I don't know if I've ever formed a bond like that we formed in that moment of not being able to communicate. And all of a sudden we're like these brothers in battle, just running along this amazing route. And we were dropping some great times. I mean, we made it through mile 100 in 1645. Roughly about that. And then just, you know, it was like all of a sudden we were running as a team. And it was like, if I was hurting, he slowed down. If he was hurting, I slowed down. It was just like, we're just going to help each other push through this. Cause I think we both knew that like sometimes you need that extra hand to reach out and help you. And it was like total godsend moment that this, you know, this person is helping me and I'm helping him. And he's puking and I'm puking and we're just moving right along. So not necessarily one moment, but that encapsulated just an amazing experience.
That's so cool.
That's a lot of puking.
Yeah. He puked a good bit more than me, but I had my moment.
Do you guys keep in touch or have you contacted each other?
So I don't know if you'll get into my experience after the race. Because I can hold on off on that if you want me to. He went searching for me because all the things that happened after, and man, I get emotional thinking about it. But I got a message from him through social media. He'd found me, and the funny thing is that I'm in the hospital after the race, and I had messaged him, but he didn't see it because it's like it puts it in that like blind messaging or whatever where you might miss it. I ended up meeting up with him like a day and a half later or 2 days later at the award ceremony. And it was just like, you know, just huge hug. It was just like, you know, it was like a brother of mine. So it's been pretty awesome. So we talk about training and life and we're always having to translate our messages to each other.
That's so cool though. Brother for life. No doubt. It's amazing how certain experiences can just bond like instantly, you know?
Right, right. Especially those hard experiences. He's asked me like a few different times and I've asked him like, "You ever want to come to New Orleans?" Or he's like, "Do you want to come to Buenos Aires?" And so, you know, I imagine one time we'll make that happen. So that'll be really neat.
That's awesome. I think it sounds like a future Salton Sea team. I know you've already got a couple wins out there.
There you go. So.
Oh yeah, I would love to go for another one. That Salton Sea is Badwater Salton Sea is just great. I've had two great experiences there, although not the whole entire race was a good experience. I suffered a good bit in each, but
so talking about suffering a little bit, we do want to talk about the end of Spartathlon. Or I guess let me ask this: I'm assuming the end was the lowest, but what was your lowest point in the race? I am curious on the back side of that, did you ever consider quitting and what kept you going?
So I'll give a little pre-information. 3 days before the race, I actually got a lot of congestion, and I was like, oh no, this is not good timing. It got worse the second day. The day before the race, I actually had full phlegm congestion. I could feel it like in my throat, and I'm like, oh man. So I sat down at lunch and I was just destroyed, dead tired. So I was like, okay, 100%, I have a cold. And now, you know, that's, I'm not discrediting my results. They are what they are. I'm super proud of finishing and all that. But now I know, like, yeah, I raced a 153 mile race with a cold and not necessarily the smartest thing to do. I hope in the future, if that happens, I may be a little bit wiser, because I know that that's what led to the Sufferfest, not just because I had a bad day out there. So, you know, at Spartathlon, you don't get to see your crew until mile 26. And my crew told me that after the race, they told me, yeah, by 26 miles, like, you were clearly destroyed. I was gone. Like, they said, like, I mean, I'm already skinny, but like, I was like very much sunken. They're like, you had lost a few pounds. Like, that's not a good way to look, you know, that soon into a big long race. And I was feeling that. I just had, from the start of the race, I had absolutely no energy. My legs just felt like they wouldn't turn over. I mean, they were turning over, but it was just like total forced. And I think as ultra runners, that's, you know, that's the skill set we want to have. We want to be able to make ourselves run when we have nothing. And so that's what I just kept trying to do. It really just, the entire race was a suffer fest for me. When I peed one time, I had this, and then it perpetuated, but I had this crazy strong, like, raw meat smell, not just like you took a vitamin. And now I know that's rhabdomyolysis. And I just kept running through it because, I don't know, I have grit, or I'm an idiot, or whatever. Well, the race finishes with 13 miles downhill into Sparta. And so they were like, Walker, if you, this is my friend that crewed me, Alan is his name. And he said, if you go under 30, he was like, you may not feel like it. He's like, but that's an elite time here. He's like, it's absolutely elite. He's like, because everyone comes here and blows up. He's like, yeah, you can have like a perfect race, but you can have an elite finish and you've blew up, but you still finish. And so I got up over this last kind of mountain and I started to kind of work the downhills and began passing people. But I had some sections that were like one 5K section going downhill with sub 7 minute pace. So like, I'm like, I told you I like to destroy myself. And so I'm just like absolutely bombing these downhills, just passing people and trying to get into Sparta. And I did, but I think whatever I had kind of reset, because I started feeling better running in and doing that crazy finish, I just completely blew up again. But the finish, the last 13 miles and running in, the video that you guys, I think, had probably seen, I mean, it was just magic. You're doing these switchbacks down this mountain, and in the distance, you can see the city of Sparta, and they have all these kids, all the Sparta kids run with you. And I mean, hundreds of them, and they're all running beside you, and kids are blowing horns, and it's probably a half mile strip of little restaurants and, you know, like a median and like the main kind of thoroughfare to run to this statue. And I mean, it was just the coolest race finish I've ever been a part of, because all of these Greek people are cheering for you and line the streets and they're all high-fiving you. And my crew handed me my American flag and I'm running with it. And I'm just, you know, overwhelmed with emotion, feeling gratitude of how did I finish this race, and crying. And I finish and I run in and my crew's right there. And I just grabbed my friend Alan and I just was just bawling, crying. And I was just like, I did not think I was going to finish. I did not think I was going to finish. And it was maybe harder in that race than any other, that feeling, or maybe right at the same level as a couple of others. And honestly, I felt great. I felt great at that moment. And I felt great for the next hour. And then everything went south. So
first, congrats on the finish. It sounds amazing. At some point, every time we hear about a race that ends in Europe, it sounds way better than any race that I've finished in.
Pretty much.
But so congratulations on the finish. It's clear that you overcame a lot to get there. We are very interested. So tell us what's next. You said about an hour. Let's, for everybody listening, you mentioned the hospital a few times. Talk us through what happens next.
Let me frame up the finish just to finish that. So like you run up, you have this giant, probably 20-foot statue. They announce your name and all that. They turn you and they pull your flag out. They put a wreath on your head. They give you this giant coin that's a relief of King Leonidas. So you have the statue behind you. They have like three, I guess for lack of better terms, like maidens in togas that give you a chalice with water from the Euphrates. And so like you drink out of the chalice and you can dump it on your head. And I mean, it's just, I mean, does it get any cooler than that? I just don't think so. I don't know where, but so just amazing. So then once they like take your picture and walk you away, they have two physical therapy students that bring you to this tent area, and they have IV bags if you need that. They have, they massage your legs and do all the, you know, whatever you need. And my crew mentioned, you're like, what do you think you need an IV? And I'm like, no, I've never had an IV. I don't think I need that. Like, you know, I'm feeling pretty good at this point. I laid down and I was probably laid down for about 30 minutes and I didn't get any water in, and they sat me up and I asked them for water, and man, I really could barely drink any. And my crew wanted me to go eat pizza. And so I was like, okay, let's go. Let's try to do that. And so I'm like hobbling around. And I was like, I cannot stand all the noise. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I just need to go back to the hotel room. But I'm not feeling like things had went bad yet. So we get to the resort we had booked. And a guy drives us on a cart. He brings me to my room. And by the time we got there, I'm like, everything is just slowing down for me mentally. I could feel, and I'm just feeling really bad. And I felt this way before, so I don't think much of that, but I just push them out the way and go straight into the bathroom and throwing up, but I didn't have anything to throw up because I hadn't had anything to drink in an hour. And I was laying on the floor in the bed, in the bathroom, and I had absolutely no energy. I pulled myself into the shower and just cut it on, eventually got my clothes off, and then just like literally like crawled to the bed, was trying to drink. But every time I drink, I'd have to get up and go throw up. And so like my body was just not taking anything in. And I was laying there and I took a few pictures of myself and some of the posts that you guys had mentioned. I took a few pictures and like my eyes were like just kind of real squirrely looking. And I tried to call my crew, and apparently he had fallen asleep. And so I'm like, oh, I don't even know what room he's in or where he is. So I've got to go find him. And I could barely move at this point. Mouth super dry. I'm feeling like I want to throw up, but I have nothing to throw up in. I eventually find his room and I'm banging on the door. He had fallen asleep. And so, you know, he'd been up 40 hours and I had been racing 153 miles and up that time. And so like I bang on the door and he comes and he's like, what do you need? And I'm like trying to tell him and he doesn't really know what's going on. And I'm like, I need to go to the hospital right now. I was like, I'm not okay. And I've never said that after a race. I've questioned if I should go, but it was never like that point. And so he rushed me to the Sparta hospital, and they ended up keeping me about 25, 26 hours, gave me 8 bags of fluid, realizing that I had extreme rhabdomyolysis, which is super common after an ultra. Your signs are going to show that you have rhabdo, for most people, or you know, 50% of the runners. After that, I had looked into it some before, But after that, I just dove into like all of these studies and just read all about it. My creatine kinase was 116,000, which are typical, like you guys and I right now are probably 120 to 200, like 120. Yeah. So 100 times over that. And I think the main thing that the sign that I knew that once I wasn't taking in water, like when I was in the hotel room and I couldn't keep anything down, that was like a sign, like I needed to get to the hospital. And so they ended up checking me into like their back rooms, and they would not let me eat until about 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock the next day, because they were still worried I was going to throw that up. And so I didn't get to eat from running 153 miles. I probably didn't eat like the last, you know, 4 aid stations or something, because I was just kind of blazing through them and just water. And then I didn't get to eat all the way until like whatever, you know, 26 hours the next day or something. So I don't think that helped my recovery after the fact. But they brought me this bowl of rice water and like chicken on the side. And I swear it's the best thing I've ever had in my life. It was so good. They really didn't want me to leave. They were talking about staying for 3 or 4 days, like the hospital. And I waited till my second blood work came back, and I consulted with a few friends that are doctors in America, and they wouldn't tell me to leave, obviously, because I'm under a doctor's care. They're like, but they were kind of in agreement that everything was trending so good. I had been keeping down water for 12 hours. I had been eating, and my creatine kinase had dropped 2/3 of the way back to normal, or maybe even a little greater. So it was like, okay, let me get out of this situation, get to Athens, the bigger city, and then kind of reassess. So I guess it's a once in a lifetime experience to be able to tell that, and, you know, be very thankful that I didn't go to sleep or fall asleep out of exhaustion, because it's tough to think of that mentally, like what that decision might have led to. Like if I were to just close my eyes, because I might not have woken up. I might have had like my kidneys might have shut down or something like that. You know, overall, it was even with all that, it was amazing. So
I've got a couple. This is an interesting topic for us. I've got a couple questions for you. One, were you, obviously you were having trouble keeping things down at the end, but were you still peeing? Do you think you were hydrated up till the end of the race?
Yeah, I was peeing. Actually earlier in the race is when like 26, 30 miles, 40 miles, I had a couple of times that I peed and it was very strong smelling. But then I cleared all that out. I was peeing clear. It wasn't dark. You know, the finish in the last 3 hours, I would have had no idea that the way everything turned did. I felt like I'm crushing this race now. Finally, I'm running to like, you know, I'm getting into like my kind of stride in a race where I feel like I'm feeling good. I'm pretty sure in my mind, I'm convinced that if I would have got a bag of fluid at the end of the race, I probably wouldn't even have this problem. I probably never been in the hospital. I probably would have been able to start digesting fluids, you know, your standard stuff. You know, everyone's destroyed after 100 or whatever distance. And so you take in fluids and you start to kind of repair. So,
can I jump in before I know where you're going to go? I think I just want to get clarification. You said that if you had fallen asleep, your kidneys would have shut down. You think, where did you get that information from? Is that what they told you? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just like curious about that, right? Because of some other anecdotal stories in a minute.
Right. I'm not saying that like that necessarily would have been the result.
Sure.
I think it would have been a potential result. Mm-hmm. Because from what I've kind of read is that if you're not getting in fluids, you're not flushing out all the proteins that are being mm-hmm. broken down. And so then your kidneys can't process that. So I definitely wasn't able to take anything in. So I feel like it was crucial for me to get to the hospital and have those fluids.
I mean, I think a lot of people go to sleep right after their race because they're exhausted. That's why I keened in on that kind of statement there, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask a similar question. So the doctor comes in and says, hey, I would imagine, and I'm going to tell you my story in a minute, but I imagine the doctor comes in and he goes, 116,000. This is not good, right? Was there any talk about kidneys? Were your kidneys functioning properly at that time? Do you not remember that being a big part of the conversation?
I'm not familiar with like how you test kidney function. I don't know if that's done through blood testing or whatever, but yeah. So, I figured that's what it was, but they took my blood and probably 3 hours later is when they finally got the results. So everything was, it was a very, slow process.
So, and for everybody listening, cause we kind of talked about a couple of things. So rhabdomyolysis is essentially just muscle breakdown. So you mentioned the proteins, right? So it's muscle breakdown. A lot of times it can happen because of repetitive motion, which obviously is runners, we do, especially for long distances. And it's interesting because I went down the same rabbit hole you did. And, one of the most common is like middle-aged women that go to a spin class for the first time, right? And yeah, you have this repetitive motion at high intensity, their muscles aren't used to it, and they end up with all this muscle breakdown that their body has a hard time dealing with. So that's, wow. If you're like, well, what is rhabdo? What is rhabdomyolysis? That's essentially it, right? It's this excessive muscle breakdown that goes into your blood, and it's measured by the creatine kinase, which is what you mentioned, the CK, right? And so when those levels go way up, that's just the blood showing, oh, hey, you have all this essentially muscle protein that now the body has to process. I'll tell you my story real quick, which is I wasn't peeing, but I stopped the race at about 2 a.m. I did vomit very similar to you afterwards, but I waited about 30 hours before I said, hey, I should probably go get some fluids. And so when I came in, my CK level was 42,000, which at the time they were kind of like, hey, this is not good. But I had, they said, you've got about 12% kidney function. So my kidneys had completely shut down for exactly the reasons that you're saying, is that without any kind of fluids, it created a sludge in my body, right? And it couldn't process all that breakdown. So I think it's a really interesting conversation. We talked about this beforehand because so everybody's listening. We talk about some of the risks of ultras and the different things. But to your point, I felt the same way after everything I've learned is, hey, if I probably just would have got some IV right after the race and thought, I haven't been peeing in a while. And I've always heard, hey, if you're not peeing, that's a big deal, right? And it was a hot day and I thought, well, I'll just get through the end of the race. But I finished at about 2 a.m. The last time I had peed was probably 2 p.m. I had run out of fluid and all these different things.
Wow. And then you went to bed.
And then I went to bed. When Jeff said, you should probably go get checked out, I said, I'm good. And I went to bed and woke up the next morning and said, okay, I haven't peed in a long time now. So actually when I went to the hospital, it wasn't, I walked in there. It was really about fluid. I think I'm dehydrated, right? I didn't know that I had kidney problems. I didn't know that I had rhabdo that bad. So thank God I went in just to say, I think I need some hydration. I'm not peeing. But for everybody listening, I think it's just an important point that, is that the norm? No. To your point, my guess is if most of us got tested after a 100-mile race, it would be quote unquote rhabdo, mm-hmm. right? We would have this muscle breakdown that's in our system because we've just had a repetitive motion for 100 miles. And that does a lot to a body. But I would say that the caution is hydration is critical, knowing that we're at higher risk for that. And I think, you did exactly the right thing once you realized something was wrong. And to your point, I'm really glad you didn't go to sleep and let that snowball go probably the way it did with me. Mm-hmm. And something else we've talked about on the show, and this is why I'm sensitive about it. And I kind of talk, because it's always the debate about, should we take Motrin during races and some of these NSAIDs thing, right? Some people are very against it. And other people are like, hey, I take Motrin every race, not a big deal.
Right.
And my personal stance is it's probably not a big deal if you can stay very hydrated and your kidneys can properly filter it the same way that they're dealing with some of the other things. My caution to everybody listening would be, I think I did during that race, and that was probably another nail in my coffin in terms of extra stress on my kidneys. Now you combine that with no fluids, muscle breakdown, NSAIDs that are tough on the kidneys, and ended up in a pretty bad spot. And so I apologize for taking over for a minute there, but it's just very interesting when we saw
information.
Yeah. And when we saw your story, it was like, man, you know, at what point did he realize? That's why I was curious. Did they talk to you about your kidneys? And my guess is that your kidney function was probably okay at that point. They probably started a blood panel and said, CK levels are way high. It's probably also why they came down so quick, is because your body was able to, you know, to process them. But that's still very scary. Right. To see those kind of numbers, you know?
Well, they hooked him up on IVs as soon as he got there, too.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And also that, for everybody listening, that is the answer, right? I went in with kidney function. It's not like they did something fancy. They hooked me up to IVs and just pumped fluid. That's the answer, is hydrate yourself.
And so, when you say hydration, do you mean just water?
Yeah, right. And so it's a saline solution typically. So yeah, so electrolytes, water, you don't want to completely flush the electrolytes out of your system.
Right.
So I guess the take-home point is, a big part of recovery is just maximizing hydration. And I think if there's any concern, then taking advantage of an IV or going, you know, to an ER urgent care and saying, I think I need some IV fluids or check my blood. Now I personally, because I'm freaked out about it, get checked after most big events, you know. And I am curious, having gone through that, do you think that that'll put a question mark in your head going forward, knowing that that's happened to you at least once? Or he's like, nah.
No, that's a great question. I can think of a few other races where basically I had this same experience, you know, same smells, same feelings. So I don't know if it'll change how I push myself, but it might change, you know, some recovery and such like that. Like a couple of my ultra friends were like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do that? Like, they're like, you shouldn't have run sick. You shouldn't have done this. And I think the rhabdo may not be a direct result of being sick, but I think it was because I had such low white blood cells and I just kind of forced myself to run myself into oblivion. I think it just like destroyed my muscles. Not really answering the question, but trying to get to that is that you only know when you're in the arena, right? You know, once you go back into it, well, are you going to change who you are? I don't know. I mean, if I'm probably honest with myself, I'm still that same person and I'm still want that same, that drive, but you also want to not end up where you did or worse, you know, heaven forbid that. So I guess we'll just have to see.
Well, so let me ask it this way. You mentioned very early on in the conversation that we don't learn from our mistakes. We learn by reflecting on the mistakes we've made, right? When you reflect back on rhabdo and the experience that you had, what do you change?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't fully figured that question out, that answer out yet. If you feel like you have like a little summer cold or whatever you want to call it, like it's probably not a good idea to toe the line for you know, a big epic race, or I've done that 24-hour race I did in Arizona. And, you know, I guess, you know, maybe you don't start in that aspect. I don't know if all things were the same besides the fact of being sick, I don't think I would have changed my approach in that race. And I don't know if I would have had the same end result, you know, so I guess so many variables change can have a big effect on what there is, but
yeah, I think, and there's so much to it. Of course, it's easy to say, oh, maybe I just don't start, but I can only imagine if I've flown to Greece and I've trained, you know, it'd be like that.
That's hard.
That'd be a little hard to let go. But I also want to thank you kind of indirectly as we prepared for this. I have definitely run races since, and it always becomes a question mark for me, right? I've had my kidney shut down. Is that what's happening again? Am I just suffering because this is hard or that? But I will say, digging deeper and thinking about your experience and recognizing that, why was mine so different compared to yours than the kidneys and that, I actually think I'll have a level of confidence knowing that hydration, and I knew hydration was what got me into it, but seeing that your numbers were, I mean, almost triple mine, but because you were hydrated early enough that it could process out for me. So that was like an aha moment. Right.
Well, it's interesting. Hydration gets you into it and hydration gets you out of it.
Right. So,
and I think that's a mistake a lot of people get, they make when they get done with these things, is that they're ready to be done. They're ready to go drink a beer, drink or whatever, eat some crap. and they're not taking care of the fact their entire body just got wrecked. They just want to be done thinking. And maybe the reflection right. for all of you, and none of us here are physicians or doctors, right?
Right.
We're not giving medical advice, but is that maybe you talk to your crews and say, hey, I need you to keep up with me and make sure I'm, you know, hydrating, and not just water, but I'm hydrating, truly hydrating, and also peeing. And if I'm not in a couple hours, let's talk about getting an IV bag and going to the doctor or something, because we need to make sure that I'm not sitting around puking and going to bed. And that's it.
Right.
Take care of yourself early and often, and don't forget that when the race is over, you still have recovery to do.
Yeah.
Right. That's good. And, you know, that's true. And there's a reason there's a small percentage of people that will ever run an ultra, right? Because it's really hard on the body. So I think we lose sight of that a lot. And we just think, oh, we can just constantly go into the well. And I know I do. I mean, I'll still, you know, be like, I'm going to crank that out. Like I would, no question, I'd go run a race, you know, but I guess you try to override that, that mental toughness with that idea of like, oh wait, let's maybe we can be smarter about this.
Yeah.
And safer.
Because we want to run multiple ones.
Yep.
We want to keep running right. them. Right. And so we need to recover so we can, and that's all it is.
Right. Right.
This was a great discussion to me.
Yeah, man, I've really enjoyed this. Yep. And one, just thankful for you taking the time. You've got some big things coming up. And so obviously we'll be keeping up kind of with the things that come up. So you're on Instagram. It's @woa_runner. And it's WHOA. And I know you're a race director. You're, right. I think you mentioned coach. So you've got a lot of stuff going on. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
Honestly, probably messaging through Instagram.
Okay.
I mean, that's a great way, you know, like you said, WHOA_runner, woe runner. I've been a race director for about 10 years, but this year I actually kind of stopped all races, and I'm going to be bringing some of those back in the next year. And I have some other ones I'm working on that I'm pretty excited about. So, yeah.
Awesome, cool. Man. Well, we put on a couple of races too. We know it's a lot of work, so totally get it.
Right.
But everybody listening, definitely go check out Walker. And thank you for your time. Thank you for plugging in. I hope you found value. And please, you know, share, send Walker some love. And Walker, just thank you for your time tonight.
Man, it was great, guys. I really appreciate it. And I'd love to do it anytime.
Awesome. We're going to keep you around for just a minute because we're going to do a fun game that we do for Patreon. But for everybody else, we will talk soon and cut.
I'm panicked. I'm like,
oh, you're going to screw up.
You can barely.
Everybody's listening.
Everybody's paying attention. Yeah, send me awesome. Something from Spartathlon too. I mean, unless you want to put a picture of him with Rabdo.
We can do it then and now. Yeah, I'll put, that's the picture. That'll be the cover, is the one that you took from when you're laying down. Looking at him.
Who is Papa Noel?
No idea.
Oh, he thought he found for sure, because this is a Louisiana thing, apparently.
Oh, that's... you mean like Papa, like Santa?
Yeah.
I don't call him that. I told you I'm not Cajun.
Apparently. And then the next words out of her mouth were, she said, we actually can't admit you here because we don't have a dialysis unit. So we're going to send you in an ambulance down the mountain. And I was like, this is not good.
I just can't see all your facial expressions when you make roll your eyes at Jeremy.
Right, right.
I hate Taylor Swift.
He lies. The patrons know better.
I have three daughters. I have three daughters. So
we've established that you're a Swiftie, so he's a Swiftie.
Yeah,
that's right.
So I've got a 16-year-old daughter, and I'm going to tell you, she's not the only fan in the house, all right? I'll admit it. Guys, I'll admit
it. I love Taylor Swift. She's great.
She can write. She's one of the best writers on the planet. Anyways, go ahead before you say something mean.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like.
We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.